This episode is brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms. Over 300 family farms raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.
And welcome back to Heritage Radio Network On Tour. Thanks for sticking with us. We are in Charlotte at Bonterra Dining and Wine Room with Chef Blake Hartwick. Thanks again, Blake, for being on.
Of course.
And I'm here with my co-host, Kat Johnson,
hello,
as always.
Hello.
So we just heard from our sponsor. They are Springer Mountain Farms. We're really, really grateful to them for the opportunity to come down
Absolutely.
To Charlotte and speak with you. I saw that you have a Springer dish on the menu. Can you tell us about the dish for a second?
Yes. We've kind of found a good relationship with Springer. So we, throughout the year, we'll do different cuts of chicken from them. Right now, we're doing a braised airline breast with...
Can I just stop you there to ask what's an airline breast?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's a... it's kind of like one of those quirky names that somebody came up with, but it's just a... It's just the breast with the wings still attached, and then we French it down so, you know, it has a little better presentation, you know. And we've actually had people butcher the wing off and ask them, you know, and they were like, what is this? I'm like, well, that's how the chicken comes. It comes with the wing, and it's connected to the breast, and the breast is connected to the, you know.
The wing bones connected.
Yeah, exactly.
Chicken anatomy lesson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So... that's why you have it on the plate kind of thing. But no, it's...
Is it called airline because of the wing?
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
I'll remember that
Yeah, there's
now.
Some funny little... I don't know who comes up with some of the... You know, it's like a bistro filet and things like that. You know, uh-huh. It's like... So, yeah, that's just one of the names that was told to me when we were getting these cuts of chicken. So
okay,
that's how we word it.
Sorry for the interruption. There,
oh,
but
no.
I had to know. Okay, so the dish, the complete dish is what again?
So our airline breast right now, we serve it with like a parsley nage over some toasted risotto, crispy Brussels, and hen in the woods mushrooms with a little sage veloute.
Wow.
Or gravy, as we would say in the South.
Yeah. I need the translation.
Thank you. Thanks for, you guys are teaching me bit by bit.
Yes.
I will not be completely lost by the time we leave here. So... I wanted to get into your menu a little bit more in detail. How often is your menu changing, and what's your favorite dish that's on it right now?
You know, I don't ever now, you know, when we were alluding to a few minutes ago on the first segment, I don't necessarily wake up and say, okay, I want to do this and do that. I let the farmers kind of dictate, you know, what we're going to do, you know, what's around, what they have, this, that, and the other. So, you know, right now with the little fried green tomato and the pickled shrimp, that's kind of a fun little kick, you know, with the South Carolina shrimp. You know, we're just getting it in and pickling it. It's very, whoops.
Something There's a real the kitchen hat back there.
Yeah.
If you're wondering.
We're really here, guys.
Yeah. So, you know, the changings of the season, you know, always, you know, I'm always super excited in the spring and the fall. Those are like my two favorite seasons of the year, because the new bounty of things that are coming around, you know, it's just great. You know, you get the super sweet, sugary things that are in the fall, like all the root vegetables and things like that. And then in springtime, you know, we get great lettuces and asparagus and strawberries and stuff like that. We've had a little bit of some weird weather here, which was great for some things and not good for others. And that's how it always is in life. But we had like a really late snowfall in March. Like in January and February, there was 70 degree days when I was like, what the hell is going on? You know, are the farmers freaking out? Are they, you know, what are they doing? And then all of a sudden, as usual, in March, we will always have snow in the Carolinas. Mm-hmm. It's been that way since I've always been here. And we had that snowfall, and it kind of up around this way, not necessarily down in South Carolina and Georgia, but we hit the frost levels a couple of times, so we lost some peaches and strawberries and stuff like that. But overall, it was okay. We didn't... We didn't lose a whole lot, but there was a lot of farmers that were covering things, and We were worried about it a little bit, but it's turned out okay this year.
Yeah, we were worried for you guys for a little while. We did a little bit of coverage, Kat and I, on our show,
Okay. Which
is the HR and Happy Hour, talking to a food distributor who works with peach farmers in Georgia and
Yeah. Trying
to see what the impact of that was. And we've just been
keeping
a close
eye on the
weather.
It didn't
seem like it was as devastating as we were kind of worried that it might be.
Right.
But it was like same time that there was crazy flooding in California. And it seems like, you know, after like March was just crazy everywhere, but it seems like we kind of like stabilized now, hopefully. And, hopefully that we can plant our crops a little bit better for late spring and summer
season.
So we have our fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's been really dry here now. Mm-hmm. We had tons of rain in March and April, and then it just stopped. So it's going to be that typical year of where we're probably going to be running low on, we'll get the summer, the summer thunderstorms and rain, but it's just looking like it's going to be that kind of year where it's just going to be on and off with the weather. So.
Well,
what do you do?
What can you do? Here we are.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Kat.
Yeah, I want to ask you more about the steak that you're cooking back in the kitchen. We just had some very delicious meat. You actually are cooking them in a wood-fired oven. Mm-hmm. So tell us why that's the way you choose to cook your steak.
Well, originally when we opened the restaurant, we had a wood fire, we have a wood fired oven and a wood fired grill. And when the oven got put in, I was like, we're not doing pizza, because automatically you see a wood fired oven, you're like, okay, we're going to do, we've never cooked pizza in that oven. We have some really nice cast iron skillets from Lodge that we use. They're flat skillets. So we keep those in the wood in our wood oven, and it gets up to about 800 degrees. So we'll just leave those in a corner and just let them sit all night. And obviously throughout the night we'll be rotating pans in and out. But that's what we'll cook, our veal chop or our fillets on, high heat, quick kind of cooking technique. And then everything else with our Kansas City strip and our ribeyes, we'll cook on the wood grill. So. Like I said, not everybody has that great option, and we certainly embrace it. That we cook a lot of stuff on that, with the wood.
Mm-hmm. And when you're keeping the cast iron in the oven for the whole night, does that also impart a wood smoke flavor onto the pan? Does that ever carry across?
That's a good question. Those pans that we have, they're probably close to, they don't break. I mean, they're it's one thing that I've noticed, and I cannot for the life of me remember. I don't think I've ordered any of those pans in probably 15 years, but the longevity of them, they're definitely seasoned. We don't take them in the back and have a guy scrub them out or wash them. We just, we wipe them off every time they come out. So there's definitely lots of flavor on that. I mean, you have to think 10, 15 plus years using the same 20 pans that we have. It's like a cast iron skillet. It's the same exact thing. You take care of it, you're just adding so much, what is the word I'm looking for? Layers of, a flavor to
patina?
It.
Patina?
You know?
Is it, yeah. Would you call it
that
a
too,
patina?
Yeah.
Yeah, but
yeah.
It's like a
crust almost. It's like...
Yeah, it's like, just layers of, just the year. And it, with the cast iron pan, you never, ever run it, put it in water, mm-hmm. Always put salt on it if you need to kind of clean it up a little bit and then scrape it up a little bit. But mm-hmm. just make sure they don't get wet and rust, and they'll last you longer than you will live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've also definitely rescued some cast iron pans
Good
that roommates
you.
Have mistreated
yeah.
terribly.
Left them out in the rain, partying one night kind of thing, and you come out
like
a
I
week
come
later.
Downstairs and I've been away, and my roommate's like, oh, yeah, I was leaving it to soak from last weekend.
And I'm sitting in an inch of water.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But they're like, they just bounce right back. I mean, there's like some elbow grease involved, but it's really incredible. And I love that you are actually, always... supervising these pans and taking care of them.
Yeah.
It's not like when you're sharing with like random Craigslist people. that I think it's really, really special that the flavors that are caked onto those are yours, and you've had control over that for such a long time.
Yeah,
I think that's something.
It's the little things, you know, that add
up. it's maybe not deliberate, but it is definitely your signature and something that nobody else could ever replicate. So I think that's super cool. And so, like, speaking of kind of signature techniques, what can you tell us about your dry aging program?
Well, without going into too much detail, with HACCP plans and stuff like that that we're working on currently, we're not doing that here in house. It's just a whole nother can of worms, mm-hmm. literally.
Mm-hmm.
And we're definitely not going to be sneaking stuff in the basement and having, like, little, you know, sneaky trap doors and things like that. Not that I'm saying anybody else has ever done that. But
definitely not a thing that anybody would ever do.
Right, right. Yeah, nobody would ever do that, you know, curing meats or anything like that. But here in Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, the health inspectors are pretty keen. They walk in the door, they look at your menu, they see what's on the menu, they start asking you where it came from,
mm-hmm.
where's this, you know, bread and butter pickle, where's this, you know, torchon of foie gras, you know, where's the creme fraiche, you know, who made, you bought the creme fraiche, right? You didn't make it. And if you made it, you have to have a HACCP plan for it, you know? Mm-hmm. So Mecklenburg County is pretty daggone strict about stuff like that. So we've learned the hard way, to take the right measures and have the people, dry age our steaks outside of the restaurant, because mm-hmm. we just don't want to get into that, you know, that liability. A lot of other things that we do here in house, you know, we bake all our own breads. We pickle, you know, a lot of our, we do bread and butter pickles, okra, green beans, you know, we do all that stuff. That's, mm-hmm. that's not a big deal, but we've had some near and dear friends, like, getting a lot of trouble here in Charlotte. Not that they're trying to, you know, do anything wrong, but in the eyes of the health department, it's mm-hmm. not cool.
Yeah, that's rough. So, I mean, we talk a lot about food regulation and the impact on preserving our heritage and food culture.
Yeah.
And it's always going to be a little bit at odds, and I think
we'll
learn over time, like, how to have kind of progressive policies that let, you know, professional food handlers use centuries of tradition to make safe foods, but I think there's a lot of growing pains in that space.
Yeah, once you start getting into county and then federal, you know, there's two people, you know, you have the FDA and then you have the, you know, the local county mounties, as I call them, you know, that look at that come in and inspect your stuff. You have to definitely have to make sure that you're doing things in the correct way. We've had the DNC here a few years back, and with all the heavy catering and the inspection of things that were going out, you know, you'd have to go through a police task force. Everything had to be x-rayed, looked at, had to put a special band around all the hot boxes. Like, if you went and did a catering in Uptown Charlotte, you know, for President Obama going for his second, you know, term, anything that went downtown had to go through a certain area before you got into Charlotte. So we had federal health inspectors, county health inspectors, and that's when it really took a big turn, and they've never looked back. It's so we're not hiding anything. We're all legit here. we don't want to get caught up in that situation, because they'll check your Facebook too. You know, they'll go on Facebook and see, oh, I just did, you know, I just sous vide'd some whatever you want to call it, and they might be in your restaurant the next day saying where that came from.
Literally just dropped. That's wild that they would.
No, it's
welcome to the 21st century, guys.
Yeah.
It's all out there.
It's all out there. No joke. It's incredible. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I mean, we live in the digital age, and everything you put on the internet, guys.
Say no to
social media. That's his message.
Well, you recently said no to Facebook, as I understand.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's really remarkable, and I think you know, we'll learn a lot in the next 5-10 years.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we'll strike a balance eventually, but...
You know, and the funny thing is I want to keep dragging this thing about, you know, inspections and thing about that, but, you know, I've traveled. I'm sure all of us have gone to Europe or in some time or the other. And, you know, I did some stages in Spain. We had a tapas restaurant for a while. One of my near and dear friends is an importer, and he lives in Charlotte for Spanish and French wine. So he has lots of connections. And, you know, the 3 times that I was in Spain going through the boquerias, you know, and the markets and stuff, in the middle of July, looking at, you know, Iberic Primo hams hanging, and it's like an upside down sombrero underneath it, collecting all the fat dripping off of it in a 95 degree July day. Uh-huh. And the first time I saw that, I was like, the health inspectors in Charlotte would shit their pants if they saw this right now.
For sure.
But everybody's been doing it for 400 years there. Nobody's died.
And guess,
you know,
what? We're all fine.
Yeah, and I bet you it was exactly. So delicious.
Yeah.
I bet you that ham tasted worth amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just little things like that, you know, it does kind of suck. You know, I get their point. You know, they don't want anybody to get sick. They are the health department.
Sure.
But just stop tracking people.
Yeah, you know,
just let us cook.
Big brother.
Well, I want to ask you about your wine program here. You have a very long by the glass list.
Yes.
Why is that important to Bonterra?
Well, first and foremost, JD, the owner, John Duncan, is always, he spent lots of time out in Napa Valley, went to the CIA out there, and that's always kind of been, that's been his baby. So we have 100 whites by the glass, 100 reds by the glass, and...
Incredible.
Unfortunately, people that are listening can't see, but where the altar used to be, we have 2 cabinets... And let's say you went into like a 7-Eleven or a convenience store, mm-hmm. where you have the open air refrigerators where you could like grab a ham and turkey sandwich or something. Mm-hmm. That's what we have here. And they're both temperature controlled to settings for white wine and red wine. So that's how we're able to keep them. And then we gas them with nitrogen, you know, every night. So mm-hmm. It's, and JD's, JD is a connoisseur of wine. He loves collecting wines and having great wines. And, you know, if anything's starting to go, that's where he comes into play to drink it all. So, you know, it's
yeah.
it's not a bad deal. It's
that.
Not a bad deal uh-huh. at all.
And
how long does a nitrogen filled bottle keep?
Like 3 to 4 days
okay.
at the most. Yeah.
Yeah.
But generally, like, you know, and it's an evolving thing. Like in the middle of the winter when it's really cold out, people are going to lean toward red wines. Now, now that it's warmer out, you know, let's say in February we might have 1 or 2 rosés. Now, I mean, we're just piling up rosés because that pink wine has, you know, been kind of the thing in the last couple of years. So we do, you know, with the season, especially down here in the South, you know, we kind of cut back on some and add to others, so we're not, you know, just constantly keeping the same wines. And JD's always made a conscious effort to not to have cult wines that we can, you know, that you won't see in a grocery store, that you won't see in Total Wine or a Costco or something like that. Because mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, when you walk through a grocery store, you're like, that bottle of blah, blah, blah is $23 and it's $40-some at a restaurant. Well, that is true, but at the same time...
That's not a bad markup.
Right, right. But at the same time, there are so many other wines out there that a lot of people don't know anything about, and that's what we're here, you know. It's like, okay, well, if you like, you know, really, really good Spanish old vine Grenache that's starting to come around now, people are, you know, starting to drink old world, you know, heavy mineral, very chewy wines, because the American palate was always California wines and more lighter, not just big, bold, you know, old world wines. We try to keep up with that, and we make a conscious effort to offer that to people, because, you know, everybody's going to drink their good old, you know, Stromsburg, you know, sparkling wine, or there's Saintsbury Pinot Noir, which you can find all over the place. And we have that here and there every once in a while, but we try to really display and show some things that are off the radar that you don't normally see, you know, in restaurant, or excuse me, in grocery stores and stuff like that.
So do you do a lot of wine education with your staff so that they, all your servers, know this full list?
We do lineups. We don't necessarily, and this is kind of a funny thing, like all our servers have been here minimum of 3 to 4 years. Our lead server's been here for 8 years.
Wow.
Like we have like a pretty solid family with the turnover's not a big turnover. Like our servers kind of know what we do and we kind of know what they do. So I don't really keep up. I mean, y'all see the wine list. I mean, it's literally a yard long,
yeah,
and a half yard wide.
Yeah.
And if you don't have good vision, you better put your glasses on and really look at it. So it's hard for me to keep up because I have enough to keep up with, but JD's constantly changing it weekly. Yeah. Pulling some on, pulling some off, putting stuff down in the cellar, moving stuff around. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's wine. It's kind of like a hoarder, like, oh, what's up in the ceiling here? Ah, I just got a, you know, bottle of 89 Cote Sauvignon, you know. Yeah. It's like there's stuff all over the place.
This here is the place to come in Charlotte if you want to explore wine.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, bar none, and try, without a doubt.
Try different and new things.
There's still nobody, I think there might be one or two restaurants in the country that do, you know, 200 by the glass.
Yeah, and your staff is awesome from our quick experience here of really being generous about offering a taste because the list is so mind-boggling. It's really great to just, like, be like, I have no idea what this is. I don't know if I'm going to like it. And they're great about, like, oh, just try it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
See what you like.
And we pour big here. We don't give you, like, the little chintzy 3 or 4 ounce pour. Well, generally, you'll get, out of a bottle of wine, you'll get 3 pours. Usually it's 4, you know. So that's been JD's motto, you know.
Yeah.
We want you to not just get a little something and you're like, I mean, you know.
I've heard that's called a club pour. I've heard that recently.
Yeah, that's, I like that.
Yeah, the big pour. One or the small
the
one?
The big one.
Yeah, I love that.
It's like a country club pour.
And you know what? It's funny you say that, and I kind of hate using that phrase, but you know, with the friends and family we've had over the years, it sometimes kind of is like that, you know, where, you know, we have the same, you know, family that comes in, you know, week after week, or we'll see them once or twice a month, and, you know, JD will sit down and bring a bottle over and walk away, and that's it. You know, you're not paying for it tonight, nor are you paying for your dinner, kind of thing. And that's how we've always rolled around here. We're not operators crunching numbers, making sure everything is. JD's never been that way, and it trickles down. You know, we're not trying to chintz you, to say the least.
Well, the feeling comes across. It's so peaceful here, and really, like, first time we really feel like we're really part of it. I want to talk about one more dish very quickly, and then we have to move to our rapid fire question round and wrap up our episode. But just tell us about the grouper dish that we were so lucky to try. Also, I think groupers tends to be a really big fish. So what does that look like when you get it?
It can be, you can get up into the mutton stage of grouper, which we kind of try to stay away from. Anything that's old and big sometimes isn't the best, per se. But Tim has brought us some 45, 50-pound groupers, and that's kind of, and he also brings, you know, black bass, vermilion snapper, amberjack, swordfish, anything that, you know, that while he's out, he's catching, you know. So this time it's grouper, but we've always had really good, relationship with Tim. He's brought us, like I said, some groupers that, you know, when you open their mouth, I wish I could show y'all some pictures so you could see them on the radio, but, like, they're they're as big as a soccer ball when you open their mouths, you know. We actually got one in one time where he had caught one, and as he was reeling it in, it ate another smaller grouper. So when the grouper, when he ate...
is a cannibal.
Right. So when he caught this grouper, it was like 30 or 40 pounds, and he was reeling it in. It ate another grouper, and so he brought the fish in. He's like, I'm giving you 2-for-1 special today. And it was just kind of hilarious, you know. He's like, I'm giving you 2 fish for the price of 1. And I was like, that's kind of weird and demented, but all right, that's fine. Yeah. We'll roll with that.
It's like a weird fisherman, like fisherman's tale that like he could totally back up. He's like, here you go. Cut it open and see.
Yeah. Right, but then I bitched him out. I was like, I only got 1-for-1 because the fish went in head first into the big grouper's mouth, and I couldn't pull it out because its dorsal fins were like caught up. And it's like, so I got nothing out of that fish, man, except, you know, we made stock with it, but that was it. So, but
it
it's funny. Like the relationship that we have with people like Tim and like Dover Farms and like, you know, a bunch of our friends here. It's always poking good fun, but at the end of the day, we all know we're the ambassadors of quality, and we want there's nothing else that we want to do more in Charlotte than put this place on a map for being a culinary destination. Because there are a lot of restaurants that that are worthy. You know, you go to New York and you pay a certain amount. I was just talking to a chef of mine, but you all have an overhead that is astronomical. I mean, when you have to pay a certain amount a month, you have to charge a certain amount a month, you know, or a certain amount on your dish. And it's becoming like that here. I mean, you know, restaurant space is $36-$40 a square foot here.
Wow.
And it's not too far away for most major cities. So the golden days are kind of gone, but we own this place. We've owned it forever. We're not
perfect.
We're not paying the man. We don't owe anything to anybody. We write everything COD, and we're just rolling. We're just having a good time.
Yeah.
So it's good. It's good. It's good to be in that boat sometimes. It really is.
Way to go. We're so lucky to be here tonight.
Thanks.
So Kat, do you want to take it away with our rapid fire?
Let's do some rapid fire questions.
Okay.
Our first one. These are all pretty easy.
Okay.
I think
I've heard this before doing rapid fire with y'all in the past.
Yeah.
So.
Uh-huh. We don't put a lot of pressure on it. Okay. The first question is, what was your last great bite?
What was my last great bite? I would have to say I was at a restaurant called Agua in Beaufort, North Carolina. I did Beaufort Food and Wine. And I'd never been to Beaufort in my entire life. It's about 5 hours from here. It's on the right above, like 2 hours above Wilmington. It's kind of right on the cusp of North Carolina, Virginia coast. Fishing town, like a mini version of Charleston, but not all the glitz and glamour and the money. Like all the old homes are preserved. They have the plaques of when they were built and all that fun stuff. But it's still a fishing town. But they have a great wine and food festival. And we went out and had dinner one night with some friends. And they were getting ready to close. And I felt awful. And I was like, we're going to sit down. We're going to order. Give us 2 seconds. And I hate being that person. Because I hate people that do that. You know, we close at 10 and people walk in at 9:59. And they sit there for 45 minutes. That's fine, you know. But I don't like doing that. So... I was like, just send out whatever you want. And they sent out, and it was tapas, small plates, and it was great. I think, and a lot of it has to do, too, with where you're at, what kind of enjoyment you're having and being with friends. And then the food captures it if it's good. It just makes it all worthwhile.
What was, like, one dish there you had that was, like, stellar?
I hate to say this. Oh, God, I hate to say this. And people are probably going to kill me, but... The shrimp and grit dish that they had there was unlike anything I ever had before. It was, and there's 2 things that I eat all the time that were the 2 best things that I probably ever had. for the shrimp and grits. And then a friend of mine, Sam Jones, that does barbecue. It was kind of like a when you're all in Charleston, you know, you had the party, you know, for all mm-hmm. for all the chefs and stuff afterwards. Mm-hmm. Well, he did a lot of the food for, you know, the after party, and showed up, did the whole hog, you know, that morning through it, and then pulled it off that night. And it was, Sam pulls up with, you know, his chopping block and everything, and then, like, went and got a plate, and I was tired. You know, we've been doing food and wine thing all day, and, you know, it was pretty warm out, and it was probably, and I eat lots of barbecue, and this is the mecca of barbecue where we are. It was probably one of the two best things I had in a long time. Wow. So it was definitely memorable.
High praise.
Yeah.
Okay. What is in your fridge at home?
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
I have a strawberry and buttermilk pie that probably I should finish it tonight.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else do I have in the fridge? A bunch of stuff for my daughter, because she has some allergies. So we always kind of cook for her in the beginning of the week. I'm trying to think of the name of this company because I'm addicted to their pizza. It is...
Roberta's.
No, they make... Oh, gosh, it is killing me. I wish I would have known this question, because I'd love their pizza. It's a one of my friends, Jamie, that was just on Top Chef, loves their pizza too. It was but it's a it's like a truffle mushroom. It's like a white truffle mushroom pizza. It'll come to me as soon as we're done with the show. But I always keep two of those in the freezer, like in case of just. I don't keep a lot of stuff in my, you know, in the fridge. So because I work a lot, and usually when I come home, like, it's pretty late. So it's generally beer and some condiments. Yeah, and the strawberry buttermilk pie.
Okay, what was your favorite childhood meal?
Favorite childhood meal, I would definitely say, would be probably Cinnamon Toast Crunch and meatloaf.
Right there with
classic.
You. That's my guilty
classic.
Pleasure.
Classic.
Now my daughter has, you know, she has some like peanut allergies, that and the other. So my fiance and I were at Whole Foods, and we found this, not Cinnamon Toast Crunch, but it's like the
Cascadian Farms one.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I as a grown ass woman eat that.
Yeah. I just had that last week, and it reminded me of being a kid, because I didn't eat it immediately. I just kind of let it get a little mm-hmm. soggy, and then I just ate all the cereal. And then the savior moment was drinking the cinnamon milk, you know, and all that. Because I was like, it just reminded me of being a kid. And it's funny that you asked me that question. But thank you for helping with the name of that cereal. Yeah,
I'm right there with you.
We'll put a savior right that pizza. To me. All right, last question. What is the go-to family meal at Bonterra?
Pasta.
Oh, that's a good answer.
Pasta.
Should have been here for family meal.
Yeah. It's always pasta generally, just because, and that's one of the cool things. Like, that's how I started cooking, because I had to cook family meal at Bistro 100. That was the first restaurant in the first segment that I talked about, where the French chef, you know, walked around and this, that, and the other. And I was in charge of making soup and doing family meal. And to me, that was a big part of learning how to go in the walk-in and not, obviously, you can't just pick whatever you want, but things that, you know, maybe we had from a buffet or a wedding or something. Okay, well, put this together and see what you can come up with, kind of thing. And that's what family meal is all about, you know?
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah,
that sounds perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Blake, for having us here tonight and for doing
another
interview with Heritage.
Always a pleasure. Love having y'all. Love being on the show with y'all in Charleston, and big supporter big supporter.
Thank you.
Thank you. I hope we see you again at the festival, but hopefully before then you'll come up to Roberta's and have a pizza with us in the studio.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll be in touch.
Cool.
And you have been listening to Heritage Radio Network on tour. We are on location in Charlotte, North Carolina. Stay tuned for more episodes and visit heritageradionetwork.org to listen to thousands more. That's all, folks.
This episode is brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms. Over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second and even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association Seal of Approval. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.